Good morning. Okay, an attempt at understanding Megillat Eicha. There's a lo pashut. Mechua lo pashut. And I've never tried this before.
I don't understand how to respond without doing the whole thing.
You're right. But I'm going to anyway. Okay. See. What's that? What? Yeah. Talking about the measures? I thought so. I thought that was Esther. Oh, you didn't see Esther. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's good just to point out some general questions of your structure before we go ahead. Basically, as we've spoken about many times in Tisha B'Av, the word Eicha itself is fundamental in the whole Tisha B'Av experience, where we pattern so many of the tinas after Eicha, the petition on the Eicha, and that goes all the way back to the Ayeka by Adam Arisha. And that's part of the way the Targum opens up the whole discussion on Eicha. So the Targum on Eicha begins with Omar Yirmiyah Leviya B'chana Rabba Echdeni Kezar Yerushalayim, and so on and so forth. Eicha, so Heich Mo Yisunu Adam V'chava Yitzruchu Meginta De'ene the Aspid Mori Alma Aloyun Eicha. In other words, we go directly back to the Eicha of the Ayeka, that's viewed as the Hespid, so to speak, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Olam V'Chava. There were Remonstrances in Yerushalmi, we spoke about of the concept of Eicha. And therefore, the Megillah itself repeats at the beginning of every parak. We talk about those that are not. At the beginning of every paragraph, we have Eicha. So the Eicha Yashva Badav, paragraph Rishon, paragraph Sheni, we have the Eicha Ya'id Ba'po, and then we switch to the personal element, which is the Ani HaGever, continuing after that with the Eicha Ya'id in paragraph Shlishi, Ani Eicha, rather, sorry, paragraph B, Eicha Yu'am. And at the end, we have a parak of basically tzvila and bakrash for the yotzi, zechor Hashem mahayalom. I don't know what it means to trust you.
It's Jewish origin. Right?
I don't know if it's Jewish origin at all. But the breakup makes sense. So not that there's a parak. I don't know if there's psuchas. Do you have a reliable? Yeah, there is a minig, but it doesn't mean anything. Certainly, you go take a look at the what you call it, either at the tikkun or in my shtender. I have a Quran, the whole Quran. There was a good tikkun here, no? Where did he hide it? He had a tikkun. Oh, Marat. You notice? And we're looking for Eicha. You only want your check now? Happened to him. So I guess he was eaten by an alligator in there.
Yeah.
Number one?
Yeah, we're just starting now. We're trying to figure out what
number
to
do.
Okay. And we never did. Okay. You better remember learning Yechel. Last I heard, you were supposed to have prepared it.
No, I remember everything you were
going to
do.
What happened to you?
I'm trying to remember.
You looked at my extender?
I didn't say anything about extender.
What is it? A what? That's not my shem. I don't know where you look. You don't know where I sit. You never come to value me. This has a psucha by each one. So then that means we can rewind it. Which tikkun?
Siman, the tikkun kodesh, the good one. And the Megillah is not rebaik on Siman. The Shir Hashem only has two simos and two of the chapters.
Mm. Okay, but if I assume if you have a psucha over here, there's a reason for the psucha.
Where? That's it.
It's where every bag.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know what this is based on. What this one is based on, but each one is spread out.
Which one is it? Which
each
one is
pasuk that? Is spread out, and there's a psucha, except the fifth chapter is a paragraph broken into two.
Whose is this? Doesn't give much information here. I don't know. Give us Eicha. But anyway, guys, we don't have. Hello? Let's try to get what mono on here. Yeah, let's start again. So we have five prokim that are built on what appear to be five psuches. In the structure of the Megillah, the three of them are Eichas, and I believe all three of those are Keseder Aleph Beis, right? Because then the Gemara points out there was a Spadat Kishalbru Asatera Chav Beis Oisius that was given to Chav Beis Oisius and so on. Yeah, the Eichas are all Aleph Beis. Then we have a perek which is personal, which is the Aniya Gever. And then we have the closing perek, which is the Gever of Bakrasha for Rachami.
And the personal perek.
What's that?
And the personal perek is
the personal perek, but it doesn't go in the. You mean triple olive, 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 base, 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 yeah. So, okay, and then we also pointed out that the Targum as well begins with a reference to the Eicha back in Gan Eden, and that Memela, it's Mashma, that the main issue is indeed Eicha, and that the Ayeka is the mocker of the concept of the Eicha, and that's why we have all of the Kinas, many of the Kinas beginning with Eicha. the pashas of that is that the idea of the kina, the klal, some call this actually the beginner's kinas, right? Gemara refers to some of those kinas. But the idea of the kina is that it's more the nature of avelus, bedak if we're asking questions. Right? In other words, we refer to a something that is meant to penetrate our assumptions, to puncture our assumptions, is always a question. So it's not that we're requesting answers. We're bedak focusing on the question. So the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks Adam Ayeka says it all. It's not that's the connection to the Ayeka. It's not that we need to look at the content of the specific Ayeka. The Shaila is an Ayeka is something that reflects something that's rhetorical, right? It reflects an impossibility. It doesn't. How could such a thing be? That's our Shaila. And it's not that we really want an answer. We don't look for answers. We look for the puncturing of the assumptions is the Eicha. And that's the Maisa, I mean, the nature of Avelus Bechlal, is that Avelus punctures assumptions, which is why it's called Aval. Aval is that, means two things. It means but, and it means truth. And it's the but nature of Aval is to say that, you know, this is what may be what you have thought, but... So it limits the nature of your general halal assumptions, and it makes it clear that this is an exclusion. So too, every avelus, in which the person made certain assumptions, here there were assumptions that one could take for granted the nature of the Yerushalayim, or whatever it is we're asking. We have to see each one what it focuses on. But the fact that we took for granted certain things may be the marker of what goes wrong. So that the nature of avelus is the dafka, not to take for granted. It could be that some of the, if you take a look at the Seder of the Tainias, that they seem to be arranged in accordance with the greater surprise. Right? So in other words, the initial feeling of vulnerability of the setting up an army around Yerushalayim. And then the puncturing of your chomot va'ot is the chomish pesach, right? And then the actual loss of the entire environment of the Mokum Hashem. So each one takes on a different assumption that a person makes. So it's the general assumption that every child has of invulnerability, which people are tremendously shaken. It's amazing. I mean, you see people's reaction to trauma as well. Or even to an earthquake, where they're not even damaged from the earthquake. There's a fantastic sense of suddenly feeling vulnerable, which they never felt before. But they at least could rely on the ground not to move. And if the ground starts moving, so I mean, it's amazing to see the extent to which I know from psychological services listed up in there. In cities that have suffered earthquakes, the trauma doesn't have to do with having suffered an actual damage. It has to do with removing your assumptions. Shaking. That's right, literally shaking. And that is generally the whole concept of Tisha B'Av and Tikkun of Chet B'Chol is to give up on illusions. So the fact that it's disillusioning, and that's the whole feeling of the Megillah, is that a person is very disillusioned, is of course a wonderful thing, as you pointed out. And as a culture that views disillusionment as being a bad thing, it's a little bit insane. No. If they're illusions, then obviously you want to be disillusioned. So in other words, you can only be misaken by no longer suffering under those illusions. So that the process of the avelus and the accepting of the korban, in a sense of saying, the more one accepts the nature of the mourning, the more one realizes how much it's necessary to have a Beis HaMikdash and how mad it is not to, and yet how easy it is not to. That's like, you know, it's like two, in a sense, contradictory things, you see. Because the assumption of the Beis HaMikdash is built on its need. The same thing is true, the assumption of why is built on its need. As the Ramban points out, is why is it that we mourn for the loss of life where it's the natural thing is to die? So normally, we don't mourn over the Zerach HaElam. That's the Mikachi Darka Shalom. And then the Ramban answers that it's not meant to be Darka Shalom. It's really a violation of the Tzura of Adam, who is capable of a consciousness that is essentially not linked to mortality. So there's a tremendous stira in mortality. It's like the story that we had by Aaron HaKohen, right? Which mamish is the beginning of Av. It's an amazing thing. It begins the Seder of disillusionment. Because it says that they did not believe Moshe Rabbeinu that Aaron had died. So it's impossible. How can Aaron possibly have died? Aaron can't die. And even HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have that amazing medrash that this HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't figure out how to get rid of Aaron. So he wanted Moshe to tell Aaron. He was too embarrassed to tell Aaron that he had to die. So he had to hint to Moshe, please do me a favor and talk to Aaron and try to get him to come up the mountain, because I'm embarrassed to tell him. So if Kaviyoko, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is embarrassed, it means that's the ultimate Eicha. And Moshe doesn't make any sense. It's really crazy. And that's why they wanted to shoot Moshe. They believed that he must have done something to Aaron. What happened to Aaron? Okay. So that's Mamish Rosh Chodeshav. Begins the 9 days with that idea of the vulnerability that an Adam is mana leshayach to mortality. I'm saying, therefore, you have a contradiction, because the more something is right to mourn for, the more you have to assume that it's a given. If it isn't a given, then why mourn for its loss? So the more central it is, the more likely it is that it will become part of your illusions at what givens consist of. So Mimela, in the questioning itself, you have to be doing two things. You have to be asking, how could such a thing happen? Because, after all, it runs completely counter to what ought to be. But in showing that, you have to explain why it ought to be. So in other words, I have to explain, so what is unique about Yerushalayim that it shouldn't have ended up in this matter? In order to explain the answer. Right? And as I have to explain to you, this is Kiryat Ne'emanah, that which is why I made these assumptions. Now that I'm makir that it's shayach to Hefzid, then I have to ask, how could such a thing have happened? If it's Be'etem Kiryat Ne'emanah, so how could it have become Kizuma? So in other words, the two elements are interrelated. You cannot mourn unless you're makir what it is that you're mourning. And you cannot mourn unless you accept the fact that the more makshiv you are something, the more important it is that it be maintained and that it isn't a given. And that seems like a contradiction. Because if something is be'etzem, then it really is an eicha. How could it be different? And if it's not a be'etzem, then there's nothing to mourn.
Are, what we do,
what is that? Okay, what is that? What does that mean? It's an actual construction. The more aware you are, let's say you become completely aware of mortality. Somebody that you love is very sick, they're dying, they've been suffering for years already. Basically, they're half in the grave when they die. There's much less of an answer. What do you mean? How could it be? Obviously, we're just waiting for that. So you cannot have a concept of Eicha by being aware of your vulnerability. That is a contradiction. The more present that vulnerability becomes, the less of a mourning there should be on it, the pashtus. Isn't that so? It's a psychological reality. I mean, and anybody anybody who has had a relative that has been on a respirator and been in a matzah in which they're basically dead, I mean, the actual death comes not as a, there's no eifel. It's an element of an afterthought. They've already accepted the mortality. So then there's this fear. To the extent that you're able to accept it, so you hold it's not a bad thing. So then there's nothing to mourn.
Potential
of this can be, this is what I bring out if I fully relate to it. That's the moment that you use it for the mood. And this is steer in that sense. Let's talk about Ayeka. Is there steer in that sense? Let's talk about Avelis. Is there steer in that sense? It would be rather strange if there's only not a steer when it comes to Yerushalayim, which is the mocker of our vision of Avelis. But there is a steer in other senses. It's got to be that something is missing in your explanation, unless you want to rethink it and say it in a way that's more universal. I mean, your explanation seems correctly directed to make it now universal.
Is that true of all relationships? You don't assume that because there's a parent, because there's a friend, and that's just the way the stone. Isn't that level of relationship requires? And that there's a construct of these relationships. And I'm not sure that makes the difference between the person and not.
Difficult to believe that that's enough to discuss the innate paradox of mortality in Avelis. And that's certainly not what Ramban is saying. The whole point Ramban is making, if you think about it, is not about what could have been, it's about what should be. In other words, what people generally ignore because they've gotten used to accepting a non-Eicha situation. The fact is that Eicha strikes us as silly today, and most people are silly today. Why would there be a Beis HaMikdash? We're used to life without a Beis HaMikdash. I've met people that are absolutely amazed at having seen people crying on Tisha B'Av. They say, I walked into a shul of the... It's like...
Some people.
Yeah, you know, Americans, you know, it's a thing you do, but it's certainly not, you're certainly not emotionally affected by it. I mean, yeah, it's something you're supposed to think about. They literally cannot conceive. I was like, Mom is shocked. They're telling me about this incredible mukkah. They walked in and people were crying on Tisha B'Av. They were like, it's a big finish. So the more that's a reason to cry, nothing else. So the main aveda of a person, you take a look in the Mitzvot Yishar, and she's simply is explaining the price of Rippin of Hizmanyoya. The main aveda of a person is Kriyas HaMeisim. It's Kedusha Mevi'eli Dei Kriyas HaMeisim, Ruach HaKadosh Mevi'eli Dei Kriyas HaMeisim. What is that part of the aveda? What is that? That's the aveda. All Aveda is predicated on Ayeka. That's what it is. It's to come back from Ayeka with a solution to the human situation. Somebody who's given up on that and who believes that they have no shaykhus to immortality, other than they have a mitzvah, and so on, but that it's impossible to ever find a tikkun, is not really shaykhus to Aveda. What he's done is he's circumscribed certain elements which he feels are shaykh to improve. But the basic issue is we have to get used to the realities. The realities are that we die. The realities are that there's no Beis HaMikdash. And so on and so forth. Yeah. What about it? That's just an example of Avelis. Yeah. That's the truth. Aldo Vareka Bafis. Because it remains a tremendous contradiction. If you can't see that contradiction, and it doesn't come into play at every moment that you see something beautiful, as Nachliyahu is pointing out, then you have lost your sensitivity to what the world was meant to be. So if the world is an ugly place, so it's a, so learn to accept ugliness. No? So why? In other words, ultimately, you can continue to define the world downwards. That's the concept of defining morality downwards. I mean, get used to a situation which this is the way people are. So that can't be the depth of immorality. So let's make this immorality now. Okay, so now your values become continually defined by responding to what you call reality and being part of the real world. The real world isn't interested in Zriyas HaMeisim, it's interested in making money. So therefore, for a guy to be Meshuggah and to believe in immortality, he's a nut of some kind. But same thing for someone who wants to go and build a base of Meshuggah, it's just a portion of Meshuggah, some kind of psionic madman. So here, in order to be able to relate to Eicha, that it should still be surprising, it has to be related to by a belief that it is a surprise, that it makes absolutely no sense. That itself is a Meshuggah Degabeda. Because it forces you to ignore what is called the real world, to ignore the limitations around you, and to continue to insist that the world was meant to be a particular way, and that there's no reason that any normal person should accept that it turns out to be the way it is. It's outrageous. It's unacceptable. It's mad. And something has to be done. Something must be done about this. Where do we find this anoga? This is Mamish anoga of the Ibis. Remember we tied it with the whole tefillah of a tefillah ben kenaz, and how we were shy after making a tefillah in which Onay El, which becomes now his new name, Osniel, instead of Yahvetz, is because of his mother. And that's what his mother was saying. She called him Yahvetz, he alluded to your Be'etzer. That's the point. Every birth since Chava has been Be'etzer. Be'etzer shall be banim. Thank you very much. I need you to point out Sefer Bereishis. Oh, Chad is, that was Tfilat Osniel. What did he say? He said, look, if you can't do this for me, God, don't think I'm going to accept it. I'm never going to accept it. I'll die miserable. The moment he said that, Miyad Vayavayel Yimas Asher B'Kish. That's the case. If you really can't accept it, because your vision is such that you're all this pushing spirit to my vision of my separation, you're absolutely right. I can't tolerate it either. It's crazy. So if a person comes to such a dargan, then Erechinami, he can address fundamental issues. The more fundamentally he addresses those issues, the deeper is his tshuva. Because remember that ultimately that's what tshuva is, right? It contradicts the assumptions that you believe are livable with. So chet is only doable because it's conceivable. If it truly becomes inconceivable, and it's not doable in the first place. That's the concept of all of our Bechira. Our Bechira begins with what is conceivable. That means that the original appeal of the Eitz Hadas was an expansion of conceivability to include things that are inconceivable. So if the Etzem, you cannot conceive of a reality that is counter to the vision of Maaseh Bereishis, which includes HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs and so on and so forth, and to you that becomes the only reality, this is the Darg of Moshe Rabbeinu, that's in terms of mitzvahs. That's why he doesn't have Bechira anymore. Then ultimately, it should be possible to be Mesakin the Mocher of Chet, which is the original Ayek. Right? It's only because he's still shy to getting angry that doesn't happen. There's still a breakdown. That's the same issue of the Hakras HaSela. There is a breakdown on the level of being mislabesh in terms of Elam HaZeh, in which there's still a dualism, in which there's still Hester. So that means that the Etzem response to Eicha is to become not more accepting of the Eicha, but less accepting of the Eicha. Because at the moment the Eicha would become totally Meshuggah to you, and then Ein Hachinami, there would be a beginner bias. So that the Bechia is not on the condition
but the fact that such could have been the condition. So now how do we interrelate the acceptance of the vulnerability with that? Why isn't that a pogrom? Because if you accept the vulnerability, so then you're saying that the most outrageous thing in the world indeed becomes the norm, unless. How could the most outrageous thing in the world indeed become the norm? And what does that mean? So then it's not outrageous, then it's the norm. There's a reconstruction of the concept of norm here. Isn't that so? We need to define that better. You don't hear the contradiction? Over there, I can see you. Basically, to restate the question, the idea of Eicha is surprise. The concept of surprise is the function of an illusion. And so surprising indeed, in other words, you never thought that such a thing would be possible. The nature of every Eicha and every Avelis. I just assumed he would live forever. But you knew him, I know, but I couldn't conceive of life without him, so therefore I pretended. Ah, this was an illusion, wasn't it? You admit that you pretended. So now I come to terms with reality. Right? So if that's the case, if I come to terms with reality, then there's nothing to mourn for. Oh, indeed, that's reality. It was rather foolish to think about being invulnerable. Obviously, we're all going to die. So then why should we mourn? If we're meant to accept this as a given, then there shouldn't be any mourning. We are indeed very vulnerable. Why did you expect it would be different? Why did you think you would be different? Why did you think only the other person is killed in a pigua? What's so surprising? Why should it be you? That's what it's telling you. So if that's the case, if that's what you're prepared for, then the Torah, it isn't mourning for you. There's some aspects of loss, but the element that responds to the Eicha is beyond the emotional loss. It's the question itself. How could such a thing happen? And the truth is that how could such a thing happen is essential in the response, because it's only the more you accept at how outrageous it is that you mourn its loss. Therefore, there's a contradiction. The element of it that leads you to respond to surprise by dropping your illusions tends towards thinking that it's not surprising at all, now that you mention it. Whereas the part that forces you to recognize the surprise, which is the recognition that it should not be this way, keeps leading you away from vulnerability, keeps making you believe that the way things ought to be is just outrageous, that it isn't that way. It's difficult to balance those two things. The more that I get to believe, it's fascinating because you see this operating all the time. Let's say even in today's geopolitical climate, the more people believe that it's a given that, listen, we've returned to Eretz Yisrael, we should have the whole Eretz Yisrael, there's no vision of vulnerability. We should just go into Gaza and we should do whatever we want, climb up to the Harabaya, do whatever you want, rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, and so on and so forth. Why not? That's the way it should be. I don't understand. Do we believe that we don't belong in Eretz Yisrael, or believe we do belong in Eretz Yisrael? If we believe we do belong in Eretz Yisrael, so what are we doing? I don't understand. What are you, crazy? Giving away land for the Arabs? Out of your mind. So to that extent, whenever something happens that takes away that feeling, there's a tremendous sense of loss in terms of vulnerability. But if you feel vulnerable, then you become like, say, Khalid. What do you mean? Of course we're not saying that Eretz Yisrael. Look at our mindfulness. Why should we deserve it, Eretz Yisrael? So I don't know, but we should give back the land because we're not right for the land. The two principles are fundamentally operative in human psychology. How do they become one and the same? What is the key to living with the surprise, with the acceptance of the vulnerability? L'chora, the only solution is, I think that this is what Barnea was saying, correct me if you're wrong, L'chora, the only solution, I'm trying to sum up, is the recognition that the nature of things involves your response to them, the essence. In which case, the Ani HaGever is central to Eifa. It isn't Ani HaGever, let me tell you some of my own feelings. It's the whole concept of Eifa is defined by Ani HaGever. Because if I recognize that the human component is the central issue in my separation, then the two are not contradictory.
Isn't they neither?
Why is it neither? But if it is, fine, it's even better. You'll tell me why it is. But the assertion is clear. The human element within Maestrasius means that Maestrasius has a vision that is meant to be shared by an Adam, and that the Adam is the vehicle in which that Maestrasius is achieved. And it's a given that that's the way it ought to be. It's mad for a person to lose track of that reality. And yet, the Yetzer Lev Adam Ra Min HaUra means that the contradiction is within the human condition itself. In other words, the fact that it's possible for me to be aware of Ani HaGever, and we use that, by the way, modern Hebrew in slang, in a sense, that, you know, Ani HaGever, in other words, it's like taking on yourself the fact that you are the man. You say it even in English, I'm the man. And it's also a slang. So we call him the man. The man is, that's the person that's meant to make things happen. So if you accept that with the additional recognition of the vulnerability of being a man, not because being a man ought to be vulnerable, but rather because that which makes it possible to ask Eicha is precisely that which makes it possible to be human. Right? It's the very fact that you are a man and therefore can choose and can define things in ways that aren't real. Then the two become not contradictory. Or at least not more contradictory than the etzem experience of being human. And they live hand in hand with that experience. Am I making sense to you? In other words, givens, when we say givens, and therefore no vulnerability, are only givens because they're not dependent on you. But anything dependent on you, even though it's a given, can be ruined by you. So the nature of the responsibility of humanity is to be aware of the contradiction of it. It ends up becoming the way in which a post-Eitz Hadas human being can function. And therefore, it's the question of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Adam. If you can be aware of Ayeta, you will be able to function. If you're not aware of Ayeta, you will be unable to function. So that the Rambam's vision in Ilfas Tshuva, which the shofar is talking about, that's it. The people who are lost in Hevelei Hazman and so on, they don't face the question. If you don't face the question, then you have to know it. You keep defining life downwards. It's the sensitivity to the question itself that allows you to accept the situation of living in the human condition, and therefore always to recognize, that's the Tzadik Yisrael Elam definition of the Rambam in Opus Tshuva. It's always recognize that everything is supremely balanced. And there's no contradiction between total vulnerability, Goram Lakola Ulam Kulai Hashkata, and between total tikkun, Goram Lakola Ulam Kulai Yeshua, Vitilo, and so on and so forth.
and that other rabbit, that defines the human condition. So that the Tzadik Yisrael Olam lives in the balance of Eicha itself. Does that make any sense to you? Mm-hmm. When you're sleeping, that's why you're looking so intelligent. We went from contradiction in Eicha between vulnerability and clarity of what should be, which sounds like a contradiction, to pointing out that that's no different than the recognition of the contradictions in the human condition, in which the responsibility for kol ha'olam kulay is devolves upon an individual human, as a tzaddik yisayid olam, and nonetheless, gufa, because of that responsibility, he has to be shayach to being mekalkul kol ha'olam kulay. Yes. Yes, but that's what it means to be human. That the same one who is given the ability to be Mekayim Kol Olam Kulo is given the ability to be Mashkis Kol Olam Kulo. Therefore, ultimately, every Eicha has to lead back to the question of Hayek. Because it's always personal. That's why we get to Ani HaGever on timing. Because without Ani HaGever, people could view Eicha as being this general sense of pain at the human condition. Many people relate to it that way. Why should mortality affect an individual human or the nation of Klal Yisrael? That's what it means to be human. That's not what it means to be human. Wrong. What it means to be human is to be that which can bring mortality and Ashkasa or Tikkun and Teva. That's what it means to be human. And that's what Eicha forces, not a general sense of misery at the human condition, because that leads to acceptance. And the point of Eicha is not to accept. It's a tremendously different way of viewing everything. These are not theoretical things. These are things that every child feels. Literally, children walk away from situations of tragedy with a sense of acceptance or with a sense of heightened awareness of responsibility. The two are generally mixed. When you go to see a tragic movie, you are not moved to giving up on life. You're generally moved to be more machshiv life. At the same moment, there is definitely a sense of acceptance of the human condition and seeing yourself as part of that condition. I never talked about inherent, but that's not the point, is to stress to being inherently evil. It's to be shaychus, the shaychus to evil. The element that allows you to be human is ultimately responsibility. And since it's responsibility, it has to come hand in hand with the Bria of Ra. I haven't read that part yet, so I don't know. I'm trying to understand the first word. If we could get through the first word, then we'll maybe be able to see how it goes through the Megillah, the theme. But first, let's be on the same page. Acceptance of what? Eicha is an acceptance of what?
That.
You use the word acceptance. I was talking about a child that walks out of a movie. I didn't say that that's what Eicha means. I said that it's a common human experience to be torn by these two responses. It's the most basic thing of all.
Even a child who views a tragic movie is moved in those two directions. I'm talking about a resolution of those two directions in AFL, which I did not hear you say. You misunderstood what I was saying. I was saying that the paradox is so simple that literally a five-year-old feels it. I would probably even be able to articulate it. Yes, did you enjoy the movie? You say yes. Didn't it make you very sad? Yes, it made me very sad. So why did you enjoy it? People don't enjoy sad things. And explain to you why you enjoyed it. Middle school explains to you why it made him sad. That means he becomes more aware of the fact of existence at the same time that he becomes more aware of the vulnerability of existence. Sometimes people think that the two are interrelated. That ain't no ordinary girl, me talk a choshek. And unless I become aware of the vulnerability, I can't be aware of the surprise of existence itself. Which is, of course, also true. Once you note the idea of responsibility, it remains paradoxical if it's just the nature of being yourself. Am I making myself clear enough? To be able to say God can't create being without creating non-being, and therefore he can't really give you being, on the surface is not a solution to paradox. It becomes a solution if you tie it into the nature of what it means to be a human in terms of responsibility. So every idiot will answer that in terms of the nature of Schar V'Einesh. What they don't recognize is that there is no Schar V'Einesh without a reality of the impact of your Aveda and the Bria. And that therefore it's a description of the nature of being of a human being, not just an excuse for him to be able to be Zerikat Olam Haba. And therefore, in a Maisa Bereishis has to be Kelo Eicha as its underlying Nekuda. So that the first time a human being becomes a human being and speaks about himself as extant, as an Anochi, is only when he's facing Ayeka. So that moment that he becomes aware of what it means to be human, that's when he says Anochi. Right? So then there's no Anochi. But with that comes not an acceptance of the chisaron, but adarav. The correct response to Eicha is to be yotze with a tremendous hashivas for what ought to be, in the horror of the fact that it should be dependent on something so nonsensical as yourself. Once that's true, then it no longer becomes a contradiction. Because if the response to that contradiction is the recognition that that exists because you are together, so then it isn't contradictory, because then, so then it demands of you something. When you do that, you bring in an entire chazal which has many subtle issues in it, and which may involve so many other things that it's an unfair question. We're going to sit down and analyze Rabbi Elazar ben Gedalia, the whole concept of an optimism between Midas, Arayat, so all of that's going to get in there.
The recognition that I am, that creation depends on me and I accept is now respond, and it's both.
Okay. And certainly, I don't know whether you mean that that's the whole thing. Are there elements of that? 100%. Absolutely. That's the ultimate truth.
The next one is the remedy is, therefore, it's all dependent on me. Woe is me that it's all dependent on me. Now I have to respond. So he felt overwhelmed that there was nothing to do, so his only way was out. The person who didn't go as far as him would be able to say, now what do I do? Coming on the occasion, I'm sure.
You're saying that Bechia, to that extent, depends on the recognition that that is what it means. In other words, there's nowhere to turn.
in terms of Ra. There's no givens. You can't turn to the sea and to the sky and to the moon and so on and so forth and say, Be Mavakish Racham Yamani. What's the Nogea then? You're the one that has to be Mavakish Racham Yamani for them, not vice versa. Rabbi Sun, I guess that's good for the beginning. And I think maybe it's enough that we could do tshuva today and forget this whole thing. That's mamish. That's a very nice point. Is that the emes, the only response? Because if you ask Mashiach emes akasi mar, and he says, oh, leave the puma lo galia, and so on and so forth, then he's not Mashiach. Because he doesn't, it's not obvious that this is an insane situation, right? The Eicha has to be Mechayim, Hayom. Obviously today, what do you mean, when am I coming? What, are you crazy? It's not going to be another day of this madness, is there?
That's the sense of
the Mashiach's
point.
Right.
When you said that, so the big beginning,
that's right.
The what? Right? When you said that, another admission. We have the
billions
of people that
fell in the
forest, right?
Rabbi Yossi
said that there's one person that recognizes
things. Should be Rabbi
Yossi tries to prove it, Marshall
Mahler,
Kalan,
and Kulan. So
that 90%
is just
even
others,
but in my opinion,
it's just
for
somebody. I don't know,
Tshuva
is not
just a problem. The difference is A, I'm pretending not Tshuva.
I think it's dependent on Shuva, sure. Shuva is part of the din of the times.
Okay. So
certainly is. Okay. So tomorrow we'll talk about that.